Speaking of shining, we have somebody who knows a lot about shining in the night sky, and that is Bob King. And Bob is a photographer, photo editor at the Duluth News Tribune, but he's really well known as the astronomer named Astro Bob. And Bob has been on our show many times, and always a great treat to have him. Welcome back to the Roadhouse, Bob.
Hey, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
We were talking earlier that Grand Marais, not in the city of Grand Marais, that we do get some light pollution there, but you get away from town just a short ways and you got a great view, a dark view of that beautiful sky at night.
Yes, it really is nice up there. I was up a couple of months ago, too, enjoying a little bit of that nighttime sky.
Now, I understand that, and I have missed them, but we've had some northern lights recently.
Yeah, actually, we did have a pretty nice display. I'd call it modest, I guess, back on the Tuesday evening, Wednesday morning. One of those where you look to the north around 11 o'clock at night, and there was just a greenish arc down there. But very slowly overnight, it kind of morphed into a really attractive display with these tall rays, and the arc split and kind of formed some ribbons. And unfortunately, I lost a lot of sleep enjoying the view, but sometimes that's how it is with the aurora, especially in the summer. You have to kind of stay up late to catch it.
You're kind of a night and day kind of a guy because you're working all day taking photographs, and you're up all night, you know, watching things happening.
Some nights I am, yes. I do. It makes it tough at work the next day, that's for sure. But I'll try to get to bed early the next night to sort of make up for it. Sleep deprivation.
Yeah, I know a little bit about that, but not for the same reason, I guess. Northern Lights, you see some beautiful photographs out there. How difficult is it to photograph the Northern Lights, and what do you have to do to make it come out the way that you feel like it should look?
Well, that's a good question, and not as hard as you think, especially if you have a good camera. A point-and-shoot type camera just really will not give satisfying views of northern lights, you know, the kind where you might get a 15-second time exposure. Once you get into the middle and higher-end cameras that have the fancier sensors on them, then really all you need is to put that camera on a tripod, open the shut, you know, put a wide-angle lens on, a zoom lens, wide-angle, open the shutter and leave it open for about 30 seconds at a high, what used to be called film speed. I usually shoot a lot of my Northern Lights pictures at ISO 1600, and the shutter is 30 seconds long. That's my time exposure. And then the lens is set to the widest opening possible, and that's typically, if you look at your lens barrel, it's 2.8 or 3.5, something like that. Because the aurora, even though it appears bright with your eye, is faint for the camera, so you need to open up and do a time exposure.
Mm. I've always marveled at some of those shots that I see. Travis Nowitzki, who's a photographer up here, has some beautiful shots of Northern Lights.
Oh, yeah, he does some beautiful things. You're right.
As many others do. What's been going on in July? You know, as far as Northern Lights go, I always think of spring and fall. Is it unusual, or are Northern Lights usually specific to certain times of year?
Well, you know how nature is. It's just expect the unexpected sometimes. You can say, I think generally, they're more common in spring and fall, but in the summer they can happen too, or the winter. And we've had kind of an active summer this year with that display in July. And as a matter of fact, right now in the aurora forecast, we're expecting possibly a little bit of light tonight, but Saturday night looks like a better possibility for a kind of what they call a minor geomagnetic storm. And that storm would appear, you'd get a modest display of northern lights, kind of what we had Wednesday morning. And that's, again, expected Saturday evening into Sunday morning, into the early hours. So we may have aurora again this very week.
We talked earlier about the weather for Saturday night, which might include thunder showers, which would kind of mucky up that view.
Yeah, I know. That could happen. On the other hand, something rare could happen, too. I always look for this, and it is quite rare, is to have a distant thunderstorm on the horizon and the northern lights at the same time.
Oh, the best of both worlds, huh?
You get them all. You get some stars, you get some lightning in your pictures, and, of course, you get to see the northern lights. I guess there's a possibility that that could happen, but we'll have to wait and see. There's other things, though, in the sky, too, things that are out there, and they're reliably out there night after night that you can look for. The planet Venus, and maybe you've seen it, too, is in the western sky at dusk. Very bright star. Look about, maybe starting a half an hour to 45 minutes after the sun goes down, and on into the darker end of twilight, you'll see a brilliant star low above the horizon, and that's the planet Venus. And should I mention some other sites as well?
Oh, yeah, we're very interested in that. You know, usually when the sun goes down, I go down, so I have to set the alarm. Get up and
summer
see Venus.
I know, summer is a tough time because of the hours. The sun doesn't go down until 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't get dark out to actually look at, say, the Milky Way until nearly 11 o'clock, you know, especially Duluth, Grand Marais, northern Minnesota. So, but Venus is a twilight beauty there in the early part of the evening. And then coming this Monday, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have noticed that the moon is out now, the crescent moon, and it's waxing. It's getting fuller each evening and also moving up from the western sky, getting higher each night. On Monday evening, it's going to pass just below the brightest star in the constellation of Virgo, and that star is called Spica. And it'll be fun to see. Right alongside of the moon, you'll see this bright star right on top of it. And if you look early in the evening, you'll see the moon a little bit to the right of the star. And if you look late in the evening at around 11:30, the moon will be to the left of the star. You'll actually see that the moon has moved from right to left in its orbit around the Earth, that little bit. So that's kind of a cool thing to watch for, to see the orbital motion of our very own moon around the Earth, using Spica as a reference.
Spica. Now, I was looking at your blog earlier in the day, and in it you included a constellation that was like 63 light years away, and a planet that was just a bunch of numbers with a B after it. I was wondering,
right.
Who names these things, and how do they get the ability to do that?
Oh, that's great, yeah. Well, they're named by, that big name, which is HD 8337, whatever it was. It was a gobbledygook, basically. That is actually the name of a star in a catalog that was compiled long ago, the Henry Draper catalog. That's where you get the HD, and then it's just got a number. Now, any star around which a planet is found, a new planet, the planet is then the star's name with the letter B. That's the first planet discovered around the star. The second planet, if we find a second one around the star, would be C, and then D, E, F, and so on, you know, until you get, like, regular solar systems like that. So the letters just indicate which the order of the planets discovered around that particular star. So if a star was discovered around, a planet around a bright star, like, what's a bright star? Betelgeuse or Sirius. It would be Sirius B or Betelgeuse B, something like that.
Now,
does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. It kind of makes sense. Now, we have names for the planets that circle our star, but they have numbers because there's so many of them out there, I assume, that you couldn't come up with names without repeating yourself.
Yeah, they right now it's just numbers for those planets, right? A number with the letter B, C, D, et cetera, attached to it. But to my knowledge, none of them have been named yet. They may still be working on what convention they're going to be using to name those planets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, and there are over 800 of them. There's just hundreds of new planets. It's incredible.
Wow. Yeah, we're speaking with Bob King, and Bob is a photographer, photo editor at the Duluth News Tribune, and he's actually probably just as well known as the astronomer named Astro Bob from his blog site and also from the information he adds to the Duluth News Tribune. You've been doing this since you were quite young. How did you get into astronomy? What kind of grabbed you?
Oh, well, just one thing before you mentioned about astronomer. I'm not an official astronomer, just so that's clear. I'm an amateur astronomer, so I don't have a degree in this, but I've just been an amateur since I was And that goes into your question, since I was about, I'd say 11 years old. And I think I just, like so many other people, I looked up in the sky and I kind of thought, wow, what is that? You know, and you look at the stars and you want to know more because it's just out there and it strikes you as being something really beautiful. So I got my first little astronomy book and I eventually got a telescope, a pair of binoculars, and I started to explore. And I think that's the thing. As a kid, I liked to explore a lot of things, whether that was the forest and the local pond. I loved clouds, and I also just kind of got excited about the sky. Part of it, I think, too, comes from the era in which I grew up, which was the early space age, when the first rockets were being sent up into orbit and to the moon, and that kind of caught my imagination as well.
Mm-hmm. When the dog circled the Earth, that was a big deal a long time ago.
That's right, the dog Laika. The Russians sent the dog up, yep.
Yeah, that
was... Oh, all kinds of...
Turned our country on end there for a little while till we could get caught up again, I guess, so...
Yeah.
I understand from our producer, Ann Passes, that she says something special is going to happen on July 22nd that has something to do with the sky. Maybe you can fill us in with...
Oh, sure. It's just a little event, but it's a fun thing to look at. When... You've got two bright planets, or the moon and a planet, line up and get really close together in the sky. They're kind of fun to look at those events. Those are called conjunctions. And on the morning of the 22nd, which is Monday morning, so we have Spike and the moon on the 15th, which is coming Monday, and then on the following Monday, the 22nd, and this is especially for you because you like to stay up late, on the 22nd, low in the eastern sky, you'll see the return of two familiar planets, Mars and Jupiter. And they're going to be right next to one another during the dawn hours. You'll look to the east and you'll see a very bright object there. That'll be Jupiter. And then look right above it and you'll see a smaller, fainter star, and that's the planet Mars.
Hmm. Well, that'll be pretty cool. That's July 22nd, if it's not cloudy out.
Well, you know, if it is cloudy on the 22nd, you can catch, they'll be almost as close on the 21st or on the 23rd. So there's a couple of days in there, you know, a little play.
You know, it's always kind of bugged me when they got rid of Pluto. What were your thoughts on that?
Oh,
you know, I grew up, I loved the name Pluto for a planet. Now it's just kind of like some baggage out there, that a bunch of rocks is what they're telling us.
Well, it's such an emotional favorite for everybody. You know, a lot of people don't want to give up Pluto. And a very tiny minority of the International Astronomical Union decided that it was going to be called a dwarf planet. So I think that the final definition of what a planet is and what Pluto may be named or renamed in the future, I think that's going to change. But Pluto does represent a different type of class of object. It's more like an icy asteroid than it is a planet like the Earth. But it is round like the Earth, and it has a whole bunch of moons around it, even more than our planet does. So there are astronomers who argue with great conviction that it should be a planet, absolutely. And there's this kind of back and forth in the astronomy community as to what to call it. And I don't think it's settled out yet, even though it appears settled. I think that Pluto's status may change in the future. By the way, we've got a wonderful spacecraft on its way called New Horizons. And 2 years from this July, 2 years from now, it's going to zip right by Pluto and take incredible close-up pictures of that world and of its system of moons. So maybe then it'll be up for debate again.
Well, let's hope so. I'll feel a lot better. Pluto's back in my vocabulary. You know what I mean? If they can call that one planet that's called Uranus, they can sure keep Pluto on the horizon.
Well, you know, Pluto, it'll always still be called Pluto, that's for sure. It's just, you know, a matter of a definition.
Great. We've been speaking with Bob King, and Bob is a photographer, photo editor at the Duluth News Tribune, and a part-time astronomer known as Astro Bob. He's got a blog on astronomy. How can they find your blog, Bob?
You can just go online, just type in Google Astro, and then put a space in there, Bob, and if you just type in Astro Bob, you should see a number of the blogs come up. You just click, and there you go. You're there. You can also pick it up on the Duluth News Tribune website as well.
That's right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Bob, and good luck tonight. I hope there's something out there that catches your eye, too.
Well, thank you. It was really a pleasure. I appreciate you having me.